Nevada. And we're on the Free FM CBS Radio. Phone number is 866-570-PEN. 7366. You can write in at penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. My guest today, filling in for the lovely and talented Michael Goudeau, is Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., executive producer, most recently of the West Wing, and also major pundit. Aren't you a really major pundit?
I'm a pundit.
Yeah.
I'm a member of the McLaughlin Group, which is the oldest running pundit show on TV.
Which you were first on when you were 6 years old?
Yes. Actually, the reason I love it, it's my favorite place to be, is that it's the only place left where I'm the youngest guy in the room.
Are you really?
I'm the only one working with my own two original hips. It's the only place, you know, where I can look half good.
and here.
Yeah, on radio I look great.
I want to, you know, we talk about Kiki Friedman all the time on the show because it just, it feeds into everything this show is about. It's a nut running for governor. And I talk to you about his chances all the time off the radio. And there's a big story today because Kiki just came out and said he'd legalize pot in Texas. What he really said was, Kiki Friedman says he favors legalizing marijuana to keep non-violent users out of prison, because there's a lot of violent marijuana users that you want still in prison. If Texas elects him governor, he says he'll try to get locked up pot users released to make room for more violent criminals. Is this just Kiki being a politician? Does the governor have the power? So you know a little bit about...
Well, that's what's great about the way Kiki talks about this stuff. He uses the word try, which is a very important thing for anybody running for an executive position, say, like president or governor in the United States, because they don't have any power. The legislatures, the Congress, have all the power. When you're running for governor, you're running for president, what you're really doing is you're saying, I want to run for the job where I have to beg the Congress to do stuff. Here are the things I will beg them to do. You know, you can then separately do the math yourself and say, okay, they're not going to do that, they're not going to do that, they're not going to do that. So Kinky's position on this is entirely academic, because if he becomes governor of Texas, the Texas legislature is not going to enact that law that Kiki is now thinking about.
But if they did enact the law, like they did for medical marijuana in California, the federal government just says no anyway, right?
It was a little worse than that in California. The legislature didn't do it because, you know, voting on things like that is risky for politicians. It was a voter initiative. It was a ballot initiative in California.
Mm-hmm.
So the voters, the people, we, the people of California, of which I am one, voted for medical marijuana in California. And then the DEA, the federal government, says, so what? We don't care.
How can they do that?
Well, that's the separation of powers issue. It's you know, it's the original constitutional argument about how this government works. Is, you know, what if California, for example, had said, okay, slavery's legal now in mm-hmm. California? I think we all have a very clear vision of how the federal government could simply say, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what's going on here. And so it's... you know, it's one of those things that's obviously coming, especially, you know, with, if you look at the demographic of the baby boom aging into its medical marijuana years, there's going to be overwhelming votes in states all around the country to do this. And the federal government, I think, is always going to be hanging on in that opposition position. I don't think they're ever going to loosen at the federal level.
And why do you know? There's a lot of conspiracy nuts that talk about why people are so against pot. But why isn't it legal? Why isn't it put on the same level as alcohol? Do you have any idea? I mean, we did a whole show on Bull's hit about the war on drugs. And we kind of lumped them all together because we wanted the nut position of libertarian stuff that, you know, you should be able to put anything you want in your body. That's the nut position that no one agrees with.
Mm-hmm.
But pot, I mean, although I've never smoked it, and I really never have, it seems like it's very hard to meet someone in day-to-day life that hasn't at some point. And we pretty much know for a fact that Bush and Gore and Clinton at least tried pot at some time.
Yeah, they've all admitted that.
Yeah. So why would they have keep illegal something that could have put them, I mean, how long could they have gone away? They could have gone away for years if they'd been caught, right?
Well, you know, if Bush had been caught in Texas, he'd still be in jail.
Yeah.
And if Clinton had been caught in Arkansas, he'd still be, maybe still be in jail. But yeah, I mean, we have recent presidents of the United States who have smoked more pot than you and me combined. And it remains illegal. Let me just go to what I would call the most thoughtful version of the opposition.
Okay.
Okay. An informed, and he gets it, and he's hip guy. Okay. Charlie Rangel, who is the black congressman from Harlem and one of the most powerful Democratic congressmen in the House of Representatives. He's from Harlem. He gets it. He's been around. Okay. He, since he's never run for president, he's never had to say how much pot he's smoked. But Charlie Rangel's position is it'll ruin my neighborhood, it'll ruin my community, because it's a drug that if you make it legal here, the consumption of it simply won't be controllable. And he absolutely believes that it is a stepping stone thing into the drug culture and into a world of people who can, you know, if you like pot, here, try this.
But that's only if it's illegal.
Well, it's not
a stepping stone, because if you go to a bar, you are not, as a rule, offered heroin. I mean, I'm sure there are bars where it's sold, but that's not the next thing on the shelf.
Right. Well, it's hard. You know, here's the problem. Once it's illegal like this and has never had, see, alcohol, when you prohibited alcohol, you were shutting down, in effect, Seagram's and all these big businesses in this country and in other countries who knew how to distribute alcohol and put seals on it and pay taxes for it and all that stuff. There's never been such an industry for marijuana. So if you legalized it tomorrow, the American Tobacco Company would not have a package ready to go with joints in it. It would take them a while to do it, and they might not do it for a bunch of corporate reasons. They just might not. So the question of where you would get pot if it became legal tomorrow still is kind of murky, and Charlie Rangel doesn't want to go through whatever that transition period would be, where you transfer off of dealing with your neighborhood drug dealer to going to the supermarket to get it on a shelf. He fears that period. And then he really does fear what happens when you have freely available mood-altering substances, because there will always be somebody ready to sell you another one who he can tell you, this one's even better, and it's illegal. That's the most enlightened version of the war on terror. And what I like about it is that it comes from a guy whose community has been ravaged by drugs for longer than any other place in the country.
866-570-PEN, which is 7366. If you don't have letters on your phone, 866-570-PEN. We're talking, I guess we're kind of talking about pot. We started out talking about Kinky Friedman. There's two angles on this. One, the morality and the logic of legalizing pot. And the second is, if our buddy Kinky, because he is a friend of mine, if he's making a good move by saying this, and you kind of think it is because he has the word try in there, and most of the people are going to vote for him are probably pro-marijuana.
Yeah, right? You know what I would have suggested Kinky do with this, actually, is one notch more thoughtful than the simplicity of, I will just legalize it. And what I would have suggested to him is, say, I'm going to equate pot with prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, I'm going to bring absolutely no enforcement resources to this.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody in the country knows that there's prostitutes in every state, and nobody, there's never been a war on prostitution, and there never will be.
They occasionally do come up with publishing John's names and stuff.
Yeah. But very localized little tiny localized wars on prostitution.
I'll take a phone call. I'm interested in hearing what Will has to say. You on there, Will?
Hey, Penn, how are you, buddy?
Never better, boss. How are you doing?
Yeah, I disagree with, like, people always saying how pot is a stepping stone into a drug culture. And I would have to say that everyone has smoked a cigarette before they have smoked pot or anything like that, you know. And that's also an individual's choice to make that decision. Everyone has a conscious decision to either take a drug or not.
Well, certainly, and there are many, many people who are out to make cigarettes illegal, so probably not your best example there. But I believe very strongly in the fact that people should have a choice to do anything. And I think you do too, right, Lawrence? You were just kind of...
I'm really on the fence about this. I know drug addicts, and I know rehabbed drug addicts. And they're the ones who, when I talk to, are most afraid of the legalization of drugs. And I'm afraid for them in the world of the legalization of drugs. I don't really know. I know this, that if I was in an executive capacity, I would not be trying to wage a war on drugs. My attitude toward it would be something closer to prostitution, meaning this is an unwinnable law enforcement exercise. It only, when you do it, it only enriches the bad guys. It only makes their product more scarce, more precious, more valuable.
Everything, and it makes the guys that are in the entry level worse people. That's an important thing.
Yeah.
So the more illegal it is, the worse person the drug dealer is that you're
right,
dealing with.
Right. And I would never be putting consumers in jail, ever.
Mm-hmm. But
you would say that to attack the dealer instead.
I wouldn't even attack the dealer. I mean, I wouldn't wait. I as a governor, you know, I wouldn't use law enforcement that way. It's such a waste of time. It's just, look, if you happen to stumble, if you pull somebody over with a broken taillight and he's got, you know, a few tons of cocaine in the trunk, okay, go ahead, prosecute him, you know. But don't put, you know, don't give him life or anything crazy like that.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I think that you, you know, the people that are trying to fight addictions, it is easier for them if it's harder to get. But yeah, for the rest of us, if it's illegal, then you have, what I mostly worry about is the danger to me and my family,
right,
who don't do any drugs.
Oh, but also,
if McDonald's and Burger King are using guns, it's worse for me.
Right, but it's also the misallocation of your resources.
Though,
you would rather, you know, have the government spend the money on something else or collect less money in the first place, which I think is where Penn
could
be on
could
this.
Could be. Yeah. We'll talk about that another day. Yeah.
That's also individuals, though, Ben. You know, that's like certain people have addictive personalities. You know, it doesn't matter what they're doing. It could be freaking ice skating, and they'll just do it all day long and not go to work or something. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't. I have a little bit of a quibble with using the word addiction to mean just about anything when it looks like the word addiction means almost nothing. There's been a lot of studies that say that that's a word that's thrown around, that even in its most specific use, that is the addiction of heroin, may not even exist. It may be a word that has been so sloppified and may have been sloppified from a definition that we didn't understand to begin with. But,
yeah,
but I know what you mean. What you're talking about is personal choice. People need to make that personal choice. And people, and I've said this on the show again and again, freedom means the right to be stupid. You never need freedom to do what everybody thinks is the right thing to do. If you
it's America,
are,
pal.
Absolutely. If you are the most brilliant mathematics professor the world has ever seen, and you choose to go work at McDonald's, that's what you need freedom for. You
so
don't need
it.
Freedom to talk about it. Absolutely. So thanks a lot. I'm only hanging up because I get some other calls I want to get to. It's all filled up here.
All right, buddy.
Okay, thanks an awful lot, Will. I want to take this call. I want to talk to David. Hey, David, what's up, man?
How you doing, Ben?
Never better, boss. Talk to me.
Yeah, like some years ago, I ran a college newspaper over here in New York City, and one of the things that we were given was a subscription to The Nation. I don't know if you're familiar with that publication.
Yes, we are.
And in The Nation, I remember reading an article, something about like Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds spending like a couple of $1 million, like $10 million, something like that, to fund research on actually seeing if they retool their machines to produce marijuana. And the results they came up with was something like that they can retool not half, but something like in the 30th percentile of their machines and be able to build an infrastructure for producing marijuana and selling it within like a couple of weeks, getting it put on the shelf.
Yeah, listen, the Nation is a very liberal, an old and well-known liberal magazine. And sure, if you were running a tobacco company, of course you'd have somebody in the research department at some time work up a memo on, by the way, just theoretically down the road, would it be conceivable for us to manufacture, you know, packages of marijuana cigarettes? Of course you would have them do that. It doesn't mean they have any plan to do it. It doesn't mean they would ever dare lobby for it. They would not. They'd be terrified of lobbying for it. But, you know, when you're running companies like that, there's a memo on everything. I mean, it's just like the government. You know, the Defense Department has a memo on how to invade Canada. Somebody's written it up, you know, because you got to have it in the files somewhere. So I wouldn't put any stock in that.
All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot, man. Thank you.
Nope.
Let me see. Boy, there's a lot of
potheads out there. The board is just, it's going crazy. It's interesting. No one sounds stoned yet on the phone.
No.
You know, they're serious.
So. Let's talk to Jack. How you doing, Jack?
Good. I forgot what I was going to say, though. No.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Go ahead, Jack.
You know, Friedman, my favorite campaign slogan of his is, Friedman's just another name for nothing left to lose.
Yeah, another word for nothing left to lose.
Yeah, I mean, that guy's great. But anyway, I don't believe this stepping stone argument necessarily because, and I have some experience with this because my brother's a drug addict. And, of course, the first drug he did try was pot.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that pot was a stepping stone to heroin. Mm-hmm. He eventually got there, but I don't think it was because of pot.
But what I find when I look,
what do you think the process was from pot to heroin?
Well, I mean, it was I know exactly what in terms of his process. I mean, it was pot every day. I mean, but the guy, when it came to pot, he didn't use it occasionally. He was one of these guys that rolled out of bed and smoked a joint, and all through the day smoked pot, and he was an addict. He was a pothead, you know. And so that kind of person is naturally going to gravitate to something stronger. But everybody that uses pot is not going to go that route.
But, you know, I found there was an interesting thing. This is a different way to state the stepping stone thing. But when we were in New York in the late 80s and I was hanging around models and the kind of shishi culture there, some of the people who did drugs and some of the people that I knew that had done drugs and were now clean talked an incredible amount about the sexiness of making the deal, that they totally separate from getting the drugs. They loved doing a day of modeling where they'd be paid $250,000, you know, for some shoot, and then having to go to a neighborhood they'd never be in and meet a person they would never talk to. You know, they liked that part of that. And certainly in Scorsese's films, you see what I think is that kind of New York artist who's digging the underworld. You know, it's the Velvet Underground song, Waiting for a Man, the kind of hat they wear, and the kind of car they're driving, and that kind of feeling. So in that way, it seems like to somebody who's romantic, you know, going somewhere to score drugs is much more romantic than going to a bar, you know, a dive on the corner.
Well, my opinion, I mean, if you take that away from it, it's not going to be cool. If you make it legal, the kids are probably going to smoke less of it because, you know, going down to 7-Eleven and getting some pot is just not cool.
Well, you know, except that when prohibition on alcohol, when the war on alcohol ended, the amount of people drinking did go up after that. The amount of murder went down. It was the biggest.
They were all too drunk to kill anybody.
But, I mean, I think that argument, I would love to use that argument. That's the argument I would lead with. But the problem is it did not happen with alcohol. And the fact that you can buy alcohol at a 7-Eleven hasn't made it uncool. Kids still get drunk.
You know what you and Jack and the rest of the callers are forcing me to do right now?
What's that?
It's something I've never done in a live broadcast of anything in my life. I'm trying to make up my mind where I am on this. And I will have an announcement for the audience by the end of the hour.
We're going to give you
where I am.
We're going to give you a break at least to think a little bit more about that. I'm going to hang up on you, Jax. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back to Free FM and watch LOD make up his mind about drugs. 866-570-PEN 7366. Also, whether you want to get stoned this afternoon is another decision you're making.
If
right?
We have the time.
Free FM, CBS, where I guess we started out talking about Kinky Friedman saying in Texas that if he were governor, he would try to get pot legalized. And even harder than that, try to get locked up pot users released so we'd have more room in the prisons. And we've kind of changed into legalization of drugs, which is always a good topic, something we should bring up all the time. 866-570-PEN, which is 7366, penradio@gmail.com, penradio.com. And sitting with us here and trying to make up his mind over what he thinks about the legalization of pot is Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., pundit on every show in the world, including the McLaughlin Group, and executive producer of The West Wing. So pretty much for a big segment of America, you were in charge of the presidency of the United States for a while. I mean, people that watch West Wing were hardcore. They believed Martin Sheen was president.
A certain amount of them desperately wanted to believe Martin was president.
So you were giving them their dreams, their utopia. So you have an eye. Let me just, there's a lot of good calls here. Let's take them. Let's talk to Ben. Ben, we're talking to you. How you doing, man?
Hey, Penn. Let me just say I'm a big fan.
Thank you so much, man.
Let me say, legalizing marijuana is a bad idea.
Okay. Tell us why.
It becomes a commodity. It's traded. I mean, you have all the regulations, and you're going to go through the phase where kids are just buying it because they can. You know, they can get their hands on it. It's a lot more easy. On the other hand, I think if you lower the penalty, say, increase the fine, government makes money on it, kids aren't going to jail, and even lowering the penalties for drug dealers. I'm not saying for all drugs, just marijuana.
Okay, this show is killing me. This is exactly what I started to think during the break. I was going to wait and think about it a little bit more, but this caller's got my program now. This is my program. I want to keep it illegal, and one reason that we haven't mentioned so far is it's just, I have a 12-year-old daughter. It's just an easier anti-drug conversation when it's illegal. When you have that extra little thing going, it's like also, you know, don't drive fast. Oh, by the way, it's illegal mm-hmm. to
but
drive
you,
over.
But you live in a rich place, you know, Southern California,
where we can afford a lot of drugs.
Well, you can afford a lot of drugs. Yes. So if you say to your daughter, if you get caught with marijuana, there's a fine of $500. It's not going to scare.
No. Listen, criminal records are more of a problem in your life than that.
Okay.
If you pass the bar, try to take the bar exam as a lawyer. You know, you try to get certain kinds of jobs. It's bad. It's a dishonorable discharge from the army, that kind of thing. But I agree with the caller, and that I think what I started to think during the break was, I would keep it technically illegal, but I'd make it a lot more like traffic violating, mm-hmm. and I'd give you some very serious fines. You know, and the drug dealers. I mean, I would simply fine them the street value dollar figure of what they were caught with. You know, if you were caught with $1 million worth of cocaine, your fine's $1 million. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Like, I see some. I'm a paralegal, and mm-hmm. I see kids that, you know, they get busted. They have to, you know, they spend the night in jail. They have to go through all this court, and then sometimes the judge doesn't give them an ACOD, and they're young, and they get this drug offense on their record, and they don't realize they're 18, 19 years old. They have to put down on certain applications. Have you ever been arrested for the use of marijuana or selling up? You know, and that ruins any chance they're going to have at making a decent living. Not any chance. Some places are equal opportunity employers.
Right. If you're going to work in entertainment, that's not going to hurt you at all.
It's an extra step, an extra hump that they have to come over, an explanation that, you know, if they're not comfortable with it, basically bars them from the job.
I mean, look where we are with traffic law. We have relatively little violations of traffic law, which is to say a very, very small number of arrests given the multi-millions of cars that are moving in the United States at all times. And that is just most people are observing it in a very reasonable way. You know, out here in Nevada, in the middle of nowhere, they're going to go 85 miles an hour on the freeway, and the cops are going to understand that's actually okay. This thing is completely straight. It's daytime. There's nothing to worry about. And driving through crowded sections, there's going to be a different kind of enforcement of this.
Well, they go slower than this.
Yeah, and they go slower. But what I'm saying is that the driving public in America is fundamentally respectful of driving laws. And if you don't believe that, go to India. Just 5 minutes on a road in India, or truly anywhere in the third world, and you just see cars move in the third world, and you will have a newfound respect for how dutiful the American driver is, and how respectful of law the American driver is. Americans are mostly respectful of law.
I was on a bus in India, and the bus driver hit a guy on a bicycle, and he was down and gone, and our bus did not slow down.
Yeah,
the three Americans on the bus argued, but we were, 20 miles past.
I've never gotten on a bus in India. Nothing could get me on a bus in India. I've been in cars in India. Watching the buses is scary enough. Actually being on one.
But that's a good point. Although the very point that Ben and LOD made is also backwards, which is if someone at 18 years old tries marijuana at a party, do you want that record to stop them from being a lawyer 18 years later? Is that what you want?
No, I think I'd have a whole different set of laws for consumers, which is to say, you know, in California, for example, you know, I got a traffic ticket recently.
Uh-huh.
If I go to driving school and relearn how to drive in you know, several hours of lectures about stopping at stop signs. That record will be expunged. It'll have no effect on my life.
So
you could set up a process like that, where if we catch you as a consumer...
You go and learn not to smoke pot.
Yeah, and basically, if I was in charge of law enforcement, as much as it was on the books, I would really not enforce the consumer stuff. I wouldn't arrest people.
But is that a good way to have rules? Is it good to have rules?
Yeah, it is. I think the prostitution thing works reasonably well under the circumstances.
And what would the downside be of legalizing prostitution?
I think there's less of a downside in legalizing prostitution than there is in, because it doesn't kill anybody. You know, I mean, people will tell you that the culture of it does, you know, pimps and all of that stuff. But that actually is a zone where things might be improved by legalizing it.
Anything else, Ben? You've been the voice of wisdom here.
Yeah, no, I've been listening. I mean, what you have to say, you know, I pretty much agree with. I mean, when you say legalizing prostitution versus legalizing marijuana, it's totally different. I think that there's more abuse. You know, like you said, there are pimps. I think prostitution is something that is, I would lean more towards legalizing, because the regulations that you can set on prostitution would actually benefit the people that are involved in it. Both client and prostitute, you know what I'm saying?
Prostitution does need some federal government quality control.
look at how it is in Nevada, right? I mean, it's regulated, it's legal, you know, it's almost like you go to most third world countries, you know, there are things that are illegal, but they're just understood, or they're not really enforced. You were saying, like, driving laws in this country are, you know, you have... a more like a respectable driver, say, in the U.S. than in a third world country where, you know, they have almost no traffic law set up. You know, it's not like enforced. Right. The U.S. is like one of the only countries that, you know, fights for small things like that. And it develops the quality of a person, a certain caliber that, you know, these other countries that are developing, like India or even, you know, like the Caribbean islands, some of them, you know, they're still developing. You know, at one point you have to hope that they will become as American, like, say, drivers or people are.
I have this sense flowing over me that in any argument that I had with Ben, he would win.
Yeah, he's good. He's thought of it. Whatever you think he hasn't thought of, he's thought of it.
He's thought of it. You know, keep being a paralegal and then move yourself into government. That's my advice, Ben.
Well, you know, I always say don't become a politician because you could always own one. Truth. I see the way that some of these laws just get bent and how things end up with some people that get caught up in them. And, you know, it sucks if you don't have someone or you don't have the right amount of money to get yourself out of it. You can be screwed for life.
Thank you so much, Ben. Thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
Voice of wisdom. Thanks a lot, man. I want to talk to Roger. How you doing, Roger?
Good. How are you today?
Never better, boss.
Hey, good. Look, I just wanted to make some real quick comments.
Sure.
Police officer in Maryland, I've worked in drug enforcement, and I've been doing it for about 15 years now. And as far as the addicts are concerned, you know, the violence, you don't see a whole bunch of it. However, due to the illegalization, you do have a lot of violence associated with a lot of the corners that are notorious for being weed corners or marijuana corners. And I've seen some horrible murders that are marijuana-related. Now, if you're going to say, hey, maybe it's related because it's illegal and that's why there's so much money in it, but for people to say that there's, you know, no violence associated with marijuana is absolutely ludicrous, because I've seen horrible, horrible things.
Now, being in drug enforcement yourself, Roger, what would you tell us to do if you're king of the world all of a sudden? What's your plan?
If I was king of the world, the plan would be I can see go ahead and legalize it. Personally, I would make some certain laws on importing it, because there's people who have made millions of dollars in other countries off of the exportation into the United States from their countries. I would say keep it homegrown. You have to have minimum age requirements. You have to have special zoning for it. So, you know, you're not at a cafe and somebody ends up lighting up marijuana next to you and you're going to get a taste of that. Police officers have been killed in raids over marijuana. So I just don't think that it's worth the fight. You know, I think if you legalized it, you would probably end up with less violence overall. People use marijuana for various reasons. I don't think I agree with some of your previous callers. It's not necessarily a stepping stone to other drugs. There's a lot of sociological and psychological issues that escalate it. So I think legalization probably would save lives in the long run, but it maybe do some education with it as well.
Hey, Roger, I have a question about the soldiers in the war on drugs. We know that all recent presidents have admitted using marijuana at some point in their lives. Is that also true of the soldiers in the war on drugs? I mean, most of the guys you know and the women you know who are working in law enforcement in some capacity in the war on drugs, didn't they in high school or college or somewhere along the line also use drugs at some point?
I wouldn't say the majority of them, but there are certainly some of them. And that is, when you test to become a police officer, that is a question that is generally asked of you, and you're actually polygraphed in many cases about it. And they have a certain tolerance level. Is, you know, you can't say, did marijuana a year ago, and that's not going to be okay. But if you experimented in high school, yeah, I did it a few times. I was a kid. It wasn't a big deal. I haven't done it in years, and I wouldn't ever do it again. That's okay. But you'll find that many police officers have experienced at least a little bit of the effects of marijuana. Now, of course, with harder drugs, there's an absolute restriction on that. If you've done cocaine, heroin, PCP, that's an absolute no.
Okay, thanks a lot, Roger. We're going to go into break right now. Thanks a lot, man. We'll be back. This is Penn Jillette on Free FM, 866-570-PEN. I'm sitting here with Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. As you can tell very clearly, the person playing that piano is not stoned. You don't play that fast when you're high. That's Mike Jones, the astonishing Mike Jones. If you go to penradio.com, you can find more of his music. That'll just flip you right over to Jones Jazz. You can hear Mike Jones play some more piano. He plays all the piano you hear here on this show. And this show is the Penn Jillette Show, 866-570-PEN, 7366. Sitting here with Lawrence O'Donnell, who made a really interesting comment during the break, where he said, it's very hard to imagine any other radio show where the host and the co-host are talking about marijuana and neither of them has any personal experience whatsoever. The funny thing about that, of course, is if Goudeau were sitting there instead of you, it would also be true.
Wow.
Maybe the only three people in the world.
You're the only one I know. I always thought I was this incredible weirdo who'd never done drugs.
And you are.
Yeah.
if you agree with me on something, doesn't
it's my darkest secret. You know, I don't want people to know it. I'm not like you, because I think if people know that about me, they're gonna project a whole other set of assumptions.
Well,
that
you
are
have
false.
To, you have to go. I've never smoked pot. I'm an atheist. You know, you have to do that automatically.
I'm not a Republican.
Yeah. You have to do a whole
list of
things.
I'm not in law enforcement.
Yeah, yeah. You absolutely have to do
I'm
all those
cool.
things. No, I can't do that.
See, that's what I want people to think. And you go with that. I've never done drugs. I've never been drunk. I've never had a drink. I mean, is there anything less cool that I could reveal about myself?
And that's the reason. We got this letter here from a pothead who says, I'm a daily smoker of marijuana as well as a daily listener to the show. Ben has remarked several times he's really not a fan of pot smokers. Could you elaborate a little more on this? And I want to get to these calls. I'm going to be pretty brief here. But I graduated from Greenfield Public High School,
Massachusetts,
rural America, 1973. I don't think there's been more of a spike in drug use. I've said this many times in the show. In a given class of 30 kids, three or four kids were tripping on acid. There are one or two kids on heroin. I mean, everybody, it seemed, was drunk. And I was really rebellious. I did not get along well in high school. And pot, to me, is not a symbol of the counterculture. Pot, to me, is a symbol of the norm. All the football players did it. Everybody was doing it. And I didn't want to be like them. I wanted to get out of Greenfield, Massachusetts. I wanted to do something different. So to me, it's a whole different symbol. You know, it's more like, why don't you wear a suit and tie than it is, you know, why aren't you part of that whole thing? And I don't know, with you, was it similar?
I actually was a very bad get-laid strategy. Everybody in my neighborhood was drunk by the time they were 12 years old. They were drunk every Friday and Saturday night. And my strategy starting then was, I'll be the guy who's not puking.
Right. Well,
Let's see if that gets me anywhere. And it turns out it doesn't.
No. I get to drive girls home because no one else can give them a ride.
Yeah.
They're all too drunk.
Yeah.
I get to do that. And that paid off a couple times for me, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to Morgan. Hello, Morgan. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Never better. Never better, boss. What's up?
No, I just caught the show. It's not something I typically listen to, but I just heard a lot of different comments about addiction, about the gateway, about the legalization.
Sure.
And the only thing that I offer is my own experience through the fact that it was a gateway drug for me. But my understanding as well is that people that are drug addicts suffer from a disorder, That is very, very misunderstood. And although some people can smoke pot and be fine with it, there's the others in the world that are addicts or alcoholics or whatnot that have an actual allergic reaction, which leads to something more. It's a progressive disease that's very, very misunderstood.
It was a gateway to what in your case, Morgan?
It was a gateway to something else. You know, for me, I do suffer from the disease of addiction, and for anybody that doesn't believe it's a disease, understand that insurance companies spend millions and millions of dollars yearly to try to help people with this disorder.
Right, but some people
who don't... It was a gateway to the next thing. You know, like, I always needed to find something else that would alter that state of mind, because for me, and I only speak of my experience, I needed something to get out of who I was because I couldn't cope with life on a daily basis, you know?
But I'll also just say, Morgan, that some people who question the category of disease, that is a circular logic, because the people that question it would say that the insurance company should not be paying those millions of dollars as a disease. So that is a circular logic. But I just wanted to say, so what do you think is the solution? What would have helped you the most for the rest of us to do to stop you from becoming an addict or being?
I don't think, from my understanding of it and the information behind it, drug abuse is only a symptom of it. It's a lot of other symptoms, you know, that manifest itself in a lot of antisocial ways. But the bottom line is, like, if you legalize it, is it going to become more of a problem, or is it going to be heading towards the solution that we have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people that are doing things and it's leading to things? Is it going to help us or is it going to hurt us?
Right, but my question is, as two people here who do not do drugs and is part of a society where some people don't do drugs, what's the most efficient and compassionate thing for people like us to do to help people like you? I mean, at your early stages, before you were using drugs, what could we have done?
You know what? I don't know if anybody could have done anything because I was self-will run riot. Nobody was going to tell me anything. I was very young when I picked it up. It was the thing to do, and it was the thing that worked at that point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I don't think legalization is the right way to go for something. You know, you got to look at the fact, like alcohol. Like, look at how many people's lives are destroyed yearly by alcohol. Mm-hmm. And, you know, although some people don't suffer from it, other people do. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think legalization is really a solution for anything. You know, people are still going to do what they have to do, and they're still going to commit crimes. You know, you got to look at pharmacies that have all these legal prescription drugs. People do a lot of illegal things to get these things, you know. So I don't think legalization is going to really support a solution towards it. It's just going to perpetuate a problem in a lot of different areas that maybe we haven't seen.
So
it hasn't been legal.
You would keep things the way they are?
I'm sorry?
You would keep things the way they are? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't know if I would keep things the way they are. You know, you have a lot of different types of information available for a lot of people, but through my own experience, I know that a lot of people don't learn anything until they experience it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you can't really project what would come of something if there's no experience behind it, you know? So...
My choice would be to run a few experiments. But thanks an awful lot, Morgan. And I do just want to say that I do disagree with you on the disease aspect, just because I'm bothered by that word being used by that definition. But I really don't want to get into it now. You stated yours, I'm going to state mine, but I want to keep on the subject we're doing. So please forgive me for not going further in that. But I don't want to appear like I'm saying I'm agreeing with you, and I really don't. But thanks an awful lot, Morgan, for that perspective.
Thank you.
Do you want to take? I'm going to take another call. We got plenty of time here. Ebony, is that right?
Yes.
What's up?
So when I was in high school, or I don't know if it was high school or college or something, somebody
is this
going to
be a penthouse letter?
I like this story already. Can I just say, with that voice and when I was in high school,
it's a nice,
I'm
nice
listening.
Start. Nice start.
I'm listening.
Go ahead, Ebony. Thank you.
It's funny. Everybody always says you always have, like, the best phone voice. So well, I'm like, oh, thanks.
We've noticed.
Somebody had said to me that the one thing that made prohibition hard to regulate is that the people who wanted prohibition to happen were part of a, like, morality sect. Like, they were church, you know, temperance.
Yeah, exactly.
And so their whole idea of alcohol is that it was evil, it was sinful. So that was one reason why it kind of failed, because people were now committing murders, because just a bunch of people who were, like, in this Christian type of sect or whatever wanted alcohol back banned. And so that's kind of why it didn't work. My other thing is, like, with the whole legalization thing, and I wanted to point out, I live in Baltimore, And so I watch The Wire a lot because I get geeked out about it. And the last season up, that was in 2004, they had this whole section called Hamsterdam, and it was showing how they could reduce crime by legalizing drugs. I'm not saying if that really would work or not, but I think right now in our war on drugs or whatever you want to call it, we are kind of too far gone into the usage of the use of the, I don't know if it's use or the, since it's so illegal and people are so far gone into it, you couldn't necessarily tomorrow say, okay, we're going to legalize drugs. It would have to be kind of a gradual thing because the illegal use of it has been so gradual itself that you couldn't just, you know, wake up tomorrow and say, okay, let's legalize drugs to fix all these problems.
So, now, you said that the problem with prohibition was that it was trying to legislate morality, essentially. But don't we legislate morality all the time? I mean, isn't stopping murder legislating morality? Why is it a different thing? I think that maybe what you mean is it's something based on a religious feeling as opposed to what you would call real morality. But I do think there is a difference there. Do you draw a difference between murder being immoral and drug use being immoral?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You're right, the religious morality. Yeah. Like, the people who would be like, well, you know, I guess the religious drinking aspect of it more than the social morality.
Now, do you experiment with drugs at all or alcohol?
You know what, I tried pot 3 times, and I really never understood why. I didn't like it. I didn't care for it. I tried a cigarette, didn't like it, didn't care for it. I'm 23. I drink wine. I drink beer. You know, I go out with my friends and stuff, mm-hmm. but I don't use it as an escape. I use it more as a social thing. You know, I don't necessarily have to go to the bar every night.
Well, you know, that new study has just come out that if you are a social drinker, your income averages 17% higher than someone who's a non-drinker. So going out socially is... That just came out yesterday. So going out socially with people who are co-workers is probably going to help your career. What do you do for a job?
I work like 20 million jobs. I'm in school, I try to substitute teach.
Well, that's a great way to break the ice for a substitute teacher, is to just have a few drinks with all the kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Ebony, I so desperately want to keep hearing your beautiful voice, but we're coming toward the end of the show. Thank you so much, Ebony. Thank you so much for calling. She was just starting to say something else, right, and I hung up on her. I'm sorry. Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., executive producer of the of West Wing, pundit, soon to be executive producer of something else, I'm sure people will be watching for. This is Penn Jillette. Monday will show us the triumphant return of Michael Goudeau back from his vacation, back to be here. And we'll have a whopping good time next week. I can guarantee that. So long. This is Penn.